Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back, curious minds, and a special welcome to you, our listener. Today we are diving deep into just an incredible true story, an 18th century maritime disaster.
Yeah, but it's so much more than just a shipwreck.
Exactly. It's about what happens after, how civilization just crumbles.
Yeah.
Loyalty, survival, and then this huge political fight.
We're talking about the HMS Wager. It was a British warship wrecked off Patagonia back in 1741, a truly awful place to be stranded.
Right. And what happened next, the mutiny, the starvation, eventually a court-martial back in London. Mm. It tells us so much about how truth gets twisted by power.
And how fragile order really is when things get desperate.
Our main source here is David Grand's amazing book, The Wager. So our mission today is really to pull out his central idea that history, well, it's not always what it seems.
Not objective at all. It's a contested story, right? Shaped by politics, by who survives, and frankly, by who gets their version out first.
It's a fascinating way to look at the past. Makes you question everything.
Definitely. Who lived to tell the tale? Whose story served the powerful? That's what Graham digs into.
Okay, before we get to the chaos on Wager Island, let's talk a bit about David Grand himself. People probably know him from The New Yorker, or maybe his other huge books like Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yes, and what's key about Grand is how he works. He's not just finding facts in archives, he's digging into the pressure behind those facts.
What do you mean, pressure?
Well, think about it. Every journal, every letter, every bit of testimony from the Wager survivors, it was written by someone fighting for their life, or later fighting for their reputation, maybe even fighting to avoid being hanged.
Ah, okay. So the accounts themselves aren't neutral records. They're weapons in a way.
Exactly. Weapons in a legal and public relations battle. Grand treats them like artifacts of that struggle. He's got this journalistic skepticism that's just perfect for the story.
Because the accounts are so contradictory.
Completely. You basically can't take any single version as the absolute truth. You have to weigh the motives behind each one.
Okay, so let's set the scene. It's the 1740s. There's this war going on, the War of Jenkins' Ear, which, yeah, sounds a bit strange.
Eh, it does. But it was serious business, part of a much bigger global fight with Spain, mostly over trade, empire, you know, the usual suspects.
And the HMS Wager is part of this secret British mission led by Commodore Anson. Big plans.
Huge plans. Sail around the world, attack Spanish ports in the Pacific, and the main prize, capture a Spanish treasure galleon worth a fortune.
So, high hopes. But the journey itself was, well, brutal from the start, wasn't it?
Oh, unbelievably brutal, even before they hit the really bad weather. These weren't top-of-the-line warships. They were often repurposed, overloaded transports.
And sickness.
Scurvy was devastating, just absolutely decimating the crews. Men were dying long before they even got near Cape Horn. The ships got separated in storms, battered constantly. It was hellish.
And then finally, the Wager itself hits the rocks. Off the coast of Patagonia, Wager Island.
Yep. Crushed on this desolate island. And that moment, the shipwreck, it changes everything. It's like the great equalizer.
Oh.
Because that rigid British naval hierarchy, all the rules about officers and sailors, it just dissolves instantly.
Everyone's in the same boat, metaphorically anyway.
Right. Suddenly, they're all just starving, freezing, desperate survivors on a beach. The fight isn't against Spain anymore. It's against nature and soon against each other.
And this is where the story really splits. Two leaders emerge,
mm-hmm.
to totally different paths.
Exactly. That's the core conflict Grant explores. First, you have the captain, David Cheap.
Right. Captain Cheap. Very by the book.
Obsessively so. He's all about rank, naval regulations, duty. He insists they have to try and sail north, find the rest of the squadron. Anyone who disagrees, that's mutiny, plain and simple.
Even if sailing north seems impossible.
Even then. And opposing him is the gunner, John Bulkley.
Bulkley. He sounds more practical.
Much more. He's skilled, competent. He sees Cheap's plan for what it is basically a death sentence. He becomes the natural leader for the majority of the crew, the common sailors, the working guys.
And his plan?
Build a boat from the wreckage, the Speedwell, and attempt an incredibly dangerous journey south through the Strait of Magellan to try and reach Brazil.
Okay, so you have these two factions, but it doesn't stay just a disagreement about strategy, does it? It gets personal. It gets violent.
It really does. There's a point of no return. Captain Cheap, his authority is slipping. He's probably starving, stressed, paranoid.
Understandable, maybe. But
But he goes too far. In a moment of fury, he shoots and kills one of his own midshipmen, Henry Cousins, accusing him of being mutinous.
Shoots him, kills him, over basically backtalk.
Pretty much. And that act, that murder, it just shatters any remaining loyalty the bulk of the crew might have felt towards Cheap. It solidifies the mutiny.
Yeah, I can see that. It changes the whole dynamic. Now it's not just about disagreeing with the captain, it's about surviving him.
Absolutely. So Bulkley and his larger group, they formally break away. They launch the Speedwell and head south, leaving Cheap and a small group of his loyal officers behind.
And what follows are these two unbelievable survival journeys.
Just incredible endurance. Bulkley's group, against all odds, makes it. Thousands of miles in the salvaged boat. It took immense skill, cooperation.
But not without its own darkness.
No, they had to make terrible choices. They even abandoned some men along the way to lighten the load to save the majority. It's morally complex.
And Cheap's group, the loyalists.
They try heading north again, fail, and end up back on Wager Island. And there they face absolute rock bottom. Starvation, desperation, grand documents, evidence of cannibalism. Just horrific suffering.
How did any of them survive?
They were eventually found and helped by the local indigenous people, the Chono, then later captured by the Spanish. Some eventually made it back to England, too.
It's honestly amazing anyone got back at all. But the story doesn't end there. In some ways, the biggest drama is still to come.
Right, because now the fight moves from a barren island to the halls of power in London, the Admiralty.
And Bulkley's group gets back first.
Yes, the mutineers. And they're smart. They know they could be hanged. So what do?
Tell their side of the story.
They publish it. A voyage to the South Seas before Cheap even gets back. They frame themselves as the heroes, the resourceful survivors, and Cheap as this incompetent, murderous tyrant.
Wow. Talk about controlling the narrative.
It was a brilliant move. They became public sensations. And then Captain Cheap, Midshipman Byron, the few other survivors from his group, they finally arrive. With a very different story.
So the Admiralty has a massive problem.
A huge political dilemma. Hang Bulkley and his men, who the public thinks are heroes, or find Captain Cheap guilty of murder and incompetence, which would look terrible for the Royal Navy's discipline and image.
Neither option looks good for them.
None at all. It wasn't about finding the objective truth anymore. It was about damage control, protecting the institution.
So what do they do?
Commodore Anson, who by now was a national hero for completing his own circumnavigation, he sort of intervened. The court-martial wasn't really a search for truth.
It was managed.
You could say that. They used legal technicalities procedures, basically engineered a verdict that wouldn't hang anyone major, but upheld the idea of naval discipline. The really messy, uncomfortable truths about the murder, the cannibalism, the necessary mutiny, they got swept under the rug.
To protect the Navy's reputation.
And the glory of the Empire, yeah.
Okay, so stepping back from this specific story, what are the big takeaways here? What does this 18th century mess teach us, you know, today?
Well, I think there are three really fundamental things. First is about the subjectivity of truth.
Right. History is written by the victors, or at least by those who publish first.
Or by those whose story is politically convenient. The Wager shows history as this battlefield of competing narratives. The most useful story often wins out over the most accurate one.
Okay, what's the second theme?
The collapse of social order. That island was like a laboratory for human nature, wasn't it? The strict naval rules, the class system, it all just evaporated under extreme pressure.
Shows how thin that veneer of civilization can be.
Exactly. When survival kicks in, the old rules might not apply. We revert to something more primal.
And the third.
It's got to be about the nature of leadership. You see Captain Cheap, rigid, clinging to his rank, failing.
Versus Bulkley.
Right. Bulkley was flexible, skilled, built consensus. He earned his authority through competence, not just his title. In a real crisis, that's the kind of leadership that works. Titles don't mean much when the ship is sinking.
Those are powerful themes. And Grant's book has some lines that just stick with you, encapsulating these ideas.
Oh, definitely. Like this one. The battle for survival was followed by a war over the truth. The most powerful weapons were not swords or pistols, but ink and paper.
That perfectly captures the shift from the island to London. The story became the weapon.
Yeah. And then there's the point about the court-martial. The Admiralty Court sought not the full, messy truth, but a usable past. A version of events that would reinforce naval discipline and uphold the glory of the Empire.
Oof. Cynical, but probably accurate. They needed a narrative that worked for them.
Institutional survival often trumps individual truth. And that last one about the island itself.
Survival is not a democracy. It is a meritocracy of the desperate.
Chilling, isn't it? Your value wasn't based on your rank back home. It was about what you could do right then and there. Fix the boat, find food. That's what mattered.
So this raises an important question. Okay, we're not shipwrecked in Patagonia, hopefully. But how do these lessons apply now?
They're surprisingly relevant. Think about critical media consumption. We're bombarded with stories constantly.
Right? All the time. News, social media.
The Wager teaches us to always ask, whose story is this? Who benefits from this narrative? And crucially, whose voice is missing? Who isn't getting to tell their side? We see this play out in corporate PR, political spin, everywhere.
That's a great point. Don't just accept the first or loudest story. And for people in charge of anything, organizations, teams.
The lesson is crisis management needs flexibility. Clinging to the old rules when the world changes, like Captain Cheap did, is a recipe for disaster.
You need to adapt. Like Bulpley.
Exactly. Modern companies, organizations facing big disruptions, they need transparency, they need to empower people based on skill, build consensus. More Bulpley, less Cheap, if they want to navigate the storm.
So what does this all mean? Wrapping things up, the big lesson seems to be that history isn't this fixed thing we just learn. It's alive. It's argued over.
Yeah, it's contested territory. We always need to approach the past, and maybe the present too, with a healthy dose of skepticism. Ask questions.
And maybe the ultimate lesson is just about how precarious civilization is, how quickly things can fall apart.
I think that's right. And beyond the history lesson, Grand leaves us with this really profound meditation on human nature, our incredible ability to innovate and cooperate, like Bulkley's group.
Right alongside.
Our capacity for paranoia, brutality, selfishness, like we saw with Cheap's faction, it's all in us. And it really makes you wonder, doesn't it? It challenges you, the listener. If you were on Wager Island, stranded, starving, which group would you join? Whose leadership would you trust?
A really tough question. Definitely something to think about. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and then another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.